Welcome to Science Talk. I'm your host, Cynthia Safranik, and today we're going to focus on compelling new studies that confirm the benefits of nutrition and supplementation. Our goal is to arm you with solid information based upon the latest research so you can make informed decisions about what you eat every day and how you can enhance your diet with the right supplements. It is not news that you should be taking a multivitamin mineral supplement. The American Cancer Society, the American Heart Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Linus Pauling Institute, and the AMA all recommend it. And you probably also know that most of us need more than a multivitamin to support and manage a variety of health issues. If you're not sure which supplements support which areas of health, or if you just want a refresher course on the benefits of supplementing, I suggest you take a listen to the July 2011 best-selling special edition of Hotline called Why Supplement. It's amazing. It will give you the basics of which supplements you should be using and the research that provides validation. In fact, consider it your primer, your Nutrition 101. But today on Science Talk, we are going to present a somewhat different program. Our science team is committed to staying on top of the latest nutrition research, including scientific breakthroughs. And we're always thinking about how to apply the new findings to enhance our product offering and to provide interesting areas to pursue in the creation of new products. So today, we're going to walk on the cutting edge of science and hear all about some important new research on nutrition and supplementation. So it's going to be an exciting show, and let's get to it. Please welcome Dr. Jamie McManus, MD and Chairman of Medical Affairs, Health Sciences and Education at Shackley, and Les Wong, Vice President, Health Sciences.
Hi, Cynthia.
Hello, Cynthia, and hello, Shackley family.
Before you share all the important new research with us, how about an overview of how the nutrients from the food we eat and the supplements we take actually get where they need to go, to feed the cells in our body? It's something we just take for granted, of course. So let's hear how the body actually turns nutrients into fuel.
Great idea, Cynthia. It is actually quite complex, but let's try to simplify it. Food, water, and supplements are generally consumed orally, with the digestion process beginning actually right in our mouths. Saliva contains digestive enzymes, which starts the process of breaking down the food or supplements. Then the stomach breaks down food and supplements further into proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, and then further digestion breaks nutrients into building blocks of amino acids, saccharides, polysaccharides, and fatty acids. Absorption of some nutrients occurs in the stomach, but many nutrients are not absorbed until the small intestines. The mucosa of the small intestines contains many folds containing thousands of tiny finger-like projections called villi. And the villi are covered with microscopic projections called microvilli. These microvilli create a vast surface area through which individual nutrients, including vitamins and minerals, can be absorbed. Specialized cells carry nutrients across the mucosa into the bloodstream, and then they are transported to the liver and other organisms where metabolism of the nutrients actually occurs.
With regard to vitamins, it's important to note that there are two types, classified by the fluid in which they can be dissolved and thus absorbed. Water-soluble vitamins, which dissolve in water, include all the B vitamins and vitamin C. Water-soluble vitamins aren't readily stored in the body, so consistent daily intake is important. In general, B vitamins and vitamin C not used in the body are excreted via the kidneys. Fat-soluble vitamins, including the vitamins A, D, E, and K, are absorbed through the intestinal tract with the help of lipids or fats. They're stored in the liver and fatty tissues of the body and utilized as needed.
So we need both fat-soluble and water-soluble vitamins. And in general, what do vitamins do?
Yes, we must consume all of the vitamins we need. Our bodies do not manufacture them. The one exception to that, of course, is vitamin D, which we can manufacture in our skin, assuming we have adequate exposure to sun rays at the right time of the day and year. Vitamins have multiple and diverse biochemical functions. Some have hormone-like functions, such as regulators of mineral metabolism or regulators of cell and tissue growth and differentiation. Others, such as vitamin E or vitamin C, function as antioxidants, scavenging unstable molecules called free radicals that are produced via metabolism, as well as exposure to sunlight, chemicals, and such. Many of the B vitamins function as enzyme cofactors, helping enzymes catalyze various cellular reactions.
Bottom line here, Cynthia, is that we need to make sure we're getting all the nutrients we need every day. especially adequate amounts of vitamins, minerals, essential fatty acids, and essential amino acids. And since we know that so many folks are not getting adequate nutrition from the foods they eat, the judicious addition of supplements that provide a full spectrum of these important nutrients is a great idea.
Okay, great background information. So now we're anxious to hear the research you have to share about specific vitamins. Tell us what's new.
Well, let's start with an important study about vitamin E. This study was conducted by researchers at Cornell University and reported by the American Thoracic Society in 2010. Researchers in this study reported that long-term, regular use of vitamin E supplements in women 45 years of age and older may help decrease the risk of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, by about 10%. And that result held in both smokers and non-smokers. Previous research found that higher intakes of vitamin E supplements was associated with a lower risk of COPD, but this study used a large, randomized controlled trial which provided stronger evidence than previous studies that vitamin E intake may actually prevent COPD.
And while we're talking about vitamin E, I found a Swedish study that was quite interesting. According to research published in the July 2010 issue of the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease, high levels of several vitamin E components in the blood were associated with a decreased risk for Alzheimer's disease in an older population. After adjusting for various confounders, the risk of cognitive deterioration was reduced by 45 to 54%, depending on which subcomponent of vitamin E was being looked at. Now, that's quite interesting.
And very good news.
And what's especially interesting, Cynthia, is that research is showing that the individual components of vitamin E, namely natural tocopherols and tocotrienols, may all have different benefits in risk reduction related to Alzheimer's disease. Up until now, most studies investigated only one of these components, alpha tocopherol. So the results of this research looked at tocopherols and tocotrienols effects in helping to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's.
That's really good news because just about everyone is interested in protecting cognitive function and memory. But I want to note here that vitamin E isn't just important as we age. It's important throughout life. And in fact, let me just share some new research reported in the Cochrane Database of Systematic Reviews about the beneficial role vitamin E plays during pregnancy. The study was designed to determine if vitamin E supplementation can help reduce the risk of pregnancy complications involving oxidative stress, such as preeclampsia. The review reports that women who took supplemental vitamin E were at decreased risk of developing preeclampsia as compared to the placebo group.
So when mom takes vitamin E, not only is the pregnancy at lower risk, but it's actually good for the baby as well. According to research reported this year by the American Society for Nutrition, higher intake of vitamin E by the mother during pregnancy may result in increased metabolite concentrations in the fetal circulation, suggesting that increased maternal concentrations of vitamin E may increase fetal liver metabolism of vitamin E. And in a study published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, higher serum concentrations of alpha tocopherol, again, this is a primary subgroup of vitamin E, was associated with higher birth weights on average. The researchers theorized that vitamin E may play a role in birth size by increasing blood flow and nutrients to the developing fetus.
So this is good news for both young and old about vitamin E. Okay, what else?
So let's talk about antioxidants, including vitamins E and C, selenium, and carotenoids, and their potential impact on insulin resistance. We know that insulin resistance is a condition that often leads to diabetes. Well, now there's research from Italy just reported this past summer that shows a diet rich in natural antioxidants improves insulin sensitivity in insulin-resistant obese adults. All groups in the study ate a low-calorie, Mediterranean-type diet, and despite similar weight loss in all the groups, only the two groups receiving the antioxidant-rich diet had a significant decrease in insulin resistance.
That's very important, Les. We've known for a while that antioxidants can prevent oxidative damage to cells and also help to repair that damage. So now it's exciting to be able to show that antioxidants can also improve insulin sensitivity. This can help with normalizing blood sugar, which can affect cravings and even weight management.
Well, it is always good for people to hear that ongoing research continues to validate the correlation of healthy eating and an active lifestyle as critical components of weight management. So tell us some more.
Well, Cynthia, carotenoids are always of interest to me. These phytonutrients from yellow and orange fruits and vegetables have such powerful antioxidant effects. while researchers for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta assessed the relationship between alpha-carotene and the risk of death among 15,000 adults aged 20 and older who participated in the NHANES follow-up study. This study, with results just reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association a few months ago, looked specifically at the benefits of alpha-carotene rather than beta-carotene. And they found that it may actually be more effective at inhibiting the growth of cancer cells in the brain, liver, and skin as opposed to beta-carotene. They were especially impressed with the results as they related to lung cancer. A direct quote from the study says the following. Results suggest that consumption of yellow and dark green vegetables, which have a high alpha-carotene content, was more strongly associated with a decreased risk of lung cancer than was the consumption of all other types of vegetables. That's actually a pretty strong endorsement.
Absolutely. And before we move away from antioxidants, let me just quickly report on a study from Tufts University in Boston, published in the journal Ophthalmology last summer. That study found that eating a combination of protective nutrients and a low glycemic index diet provided protection from vision loss due to age-related macular degeneration and other sight-robbing diseases. Specifically, the research called out vitamin C and E, zinc, lutein, zeaxanthin, and the omega-3 fatty acids as key dietary nutrients.
So much great news about carotenoids and antioxidants. What else have you read, Dr. McManus?
Well, let's talk about the B vitamins, specifically as they relate to hearing. Hearing loss is a major public health problem globally. More than 28 million Americans, generally those over the age of 60, have some level of hearing loss. But there's good news reported in the December 2010 issue of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery. The main finding of the study was that low serum levels of the B vitamin folic acid were significantly associated with high-frequency hearing loss in the elderly. So this is an easy, non-invasive approach to possibly helping with a very common problem, taking a multivitamin or a B vitamin supplement that contains folic acid.
This is really interesting. Now, we've known for a long time that folic acid is important for the development of the brain and spinal cord of the fetus during pregnancy. But it sounds like it's also important as we age.
It is indeed. There's also very exciting new research about B vitamins and adult brain health. Research published in the October 2010 issue of Neurology shows that vitamin B12 may help protect against Alzheimer's disease. Vitamin B12, along with folate and vitamin B6, helps to reduce homocysteine levels, which is what you want to do, reduce homocysteine. This study showed that with each micromolar increase in the concentration of homocysteine in your blood, the risk of Alzheimer's disease increased by 16%.
And there's a similar clinical trial at Oxford University, which is one of the largest studies of the effects of B vitamins on mild cognitive impairment. The goal of that study was to determine whether B vitamin supplements that lower homocysteine could also slow the higher rate of brain shrinkage or atrophy that's observed in mild cognitive impairment or in Alzheimer's disease. The results found that the brains of those taking the folic acid, vitamin B6, and B12 treatment shrank at a rate of 0.76% per year, while those in the placebo group had a mean brain shrinkage rate of 1.08%. Along with rate of brain shrinkage, the team also monitored cognitive test scores. Those tests showed that participants taking the B vitamin supplements who had the slowest rate of shrinkage also scored better on the cognitive tests. Since the rate of brain atrophy is known to be more rapid in those with mild cognitive impairment, many of whom go on to develop Alzheimer's, it's possible that the B vitamin treatment could reduce cognitive impairment and possibly even slow the development of Alzheimer's disease.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, Les, we're all concerned with keeping our brains working effectively as we age, so that's very good news.
And another interesting multi-year study done at the University of California, San Francisco, found that in women, low levels of folate were associated with symptoms of depression. In fact, the women in the study whose plasma folate levels were in the lowest one-third were more than twice as likely to have symptoms of depression as the women who were in the highest one-third of folate levels.
And one final study on B vitamins out of Japan reported in last year's Stroke found that women who ate more foods containing the B vitamins folate and B6 had a lower risk of death from stroke and heart disease. Men who consumed more folate and B6-rich foods had a lower risk of congestive heart failure. Again, this benefit may be due to these nutrients' effects on lowering homocysteine levels.
So we've talked about vitamins E, C, and B, along with the antioxidants and carotenoids. What else do you have to share?
We certainly need to at least touch on some of the new research on both vitamin D and omega-3 fatty acids. These are incredibly important nutrients. We have covered them in some depth recently in the November 2010 and February 2011 Science Talks. So Cynthia, tell our listeners how to access those.
Well, those editions of Science Talk, plus the special edition Why Supplement, are available at myshackley.com. And Shackley found the Why Supplement program to be so valuable that we are now including it in every new Shackley distributor kit. So, back to the research. You were about to tell us some new findings about vitamin D.
Yes, there's a new study about vitamin D, which really drives home the importance of taking a multivitamin because certain vitamins work together to achieve a beneficial result. The particular study I'm talking about was funded by the USDA Research Center to learn more about how to reduce bone fractures. The conclusion of this study of 10,000 adults ages 20 and up was that vitamin D is essential to assist the body's ability to fully utilize calcium, a good reminder that increasing calcium alone will not be successful in supporting your bone mass.
A good study, and as you said, it really drives home the important synergy of vitamins and minerals working together to achieve your health goals. Vitamin D and calcium certainly fall in that category. Other examples include folate and vitamin B12. If you correct a folate deficiency and do not correct the coexisting B12 deficiency, it can cause an acute dementia. It's now also understood that different types of antioxidants have different protective roles in the body. Vitamin C is different from selenium, which is different from beta carotene.
That's a good reminder that years of research and scientific study have gone into the development of multivitamins, so we don't have to figure it all out ourselves. Now, anything else to add before we close?
Well, as Dr. McManus noted, we covered omega-3 fatty acids pretty completely in a recent Science Talk. But let's just run down some of the headlines from research that's been reported in the past 6 months, just to remind everyone to take those omega-3 supplements. Here goes. According to both the ARID study and others, a diet rich in omega-3s probably protects against advanced age-related macular degeneration, the leading cause of blindness in the United States.
On another front, Les, regular use of fish oil supplements that contain high levels of the omega-3 fatty acids EPA and DHA was linked to a 32% reduced risk of breast cancer, according to researchers at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center at the University of Washington in Seattle.
And researchers at the University of California San Diego School of Medicine have identified the macrophage receptor activated by omega-3 fatty acids that's linked to broad anti-inflammatory effects and improved systemic insulin sensitivity.
And finally, findings published in the Journal of Lipid Research state that chronic excessive intakes of omega-6 fatty acids, coupled with inadequate intakes of omega-3 fatty acids, seem to increase the tendency for obesity from generation to generation. We have talked about that in the past related to inflammation, but here is another proposed health impact, obesity, as a result of this overconsumption of omega-6s from sources such as corn oil and safflower oil, and inadequate intakes of omega-3s from sources such as fish oil, olive oil, nuts, and seeds. That's all for today, Cynthia.
Well, thank you both for sharing so much exciting and important news. I know I feel very informed and love when we can dedicate a whole program to the latest health and nutritional research. Do keep us posted as new studies are published, because we look forward to hearing all the news.